Warning, we are a spoilers podcast. At times, we are also an offensive podcast. And we are most certainly a verbally explicit podcast. So if you fear for any of your delicate sensibilities, please back up now before you reach the point of no return. All right, pussies, this is your final warning.
Welcome to the podcasting equivalent of a 150-mile-per-hour locomotive being derailed right in the center of your town. We are Cinematic Anarchy. And with me tonight, as always, Miss B.
Hey-o.
And Miss B, you've brought a guest.
Yes!
Introduce her. Introduce her while I'm not talking over you.
Yes, this is Bunny.
Bunny?
Bunny!
Bunny!
I'm here. Oh. I'm just waiting so that way we don't overlap.
Well, feel free. We just introduced you, so feel free. Speak away. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I am a horror veteran. If it's been made before 2019, I've probably seen it, unless it's a foreign film. Those get a little tricky for me, depending on where it is and where the location is matters, because there are some places that I know better than others. Like, I don't know a bunch of, there are a lot of Indian horror films that I haven't seen that are spectacular. It's just I can't do the translations very well.
Yeah, a lot of the time when I'm watching, like, my movies or whatever, I'm, like, on my computer playing Minecraft, so I'm, like, listening for my shit, and the only language I know right now is English.
So you go for dubbed rather than subbed, for the most
Absolutely part. Absolutely not. If I'm watching a foreign film, I'm putting the subtitles on, and I'm going to try and pay attention to that shit, but
well, you were just talking
my
about...
attention span is shit.
You were talking about splitting your attention. How do you do a subbed movie while also playing games and doing other things? How does that work?
Back and forth.
Okay. Well, you have a better attention span than I do. Trust me. I can't
it's
do that.
God awful.
I have to pay attention to do a subtitled
movie. I dissociate regularly during these episodes.
Yes. Well, we get to... We're ADHD. Like, we built this podcast with four different people, all with ADHD that couldn't pay attention worth shit. And here we are.
And here we are, the only two left.
Yeah, well, I mean, Omar's here. As a matter of fact, Omar is reaching out to another podcast to try to do some work with them and bring them in with us. So, I will let you know more about that at a later time, once that's solidified. That being said, this evening we are reviewing a movie that just popped up on Netflix, a classic horror story, an Italian film. An Italian film that I think two out of the three of us didn't like very much. We all have mixed reasons. I actually liked the movie for what it was. I saw a lot of other horror movies within this movie.
Yeah, this had, like, touches of Midsummer and The Ritual and fucking, like...
Misery.
Cabin in the Woods. Misery.
With those broken ankles?
It just felt a little too much like they tried to put...
It was derivative.
It felt repetitive, as if they took a bunch of ideas and stuffed it together and just renamed some things. And it had potential, but had a few things changed. Like, for example... The see no evil, hear no evil, speak no... Wait, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil.
Yep.
Had that been done in a more Asian-based, let's say, mafia style, I feel like that would have given it more of a potential, because that, to me, would have made more sense, regardless of the story of the original mafia for Italy, which I understand where they were going with it, but at the same time... It would have, I felt, made more sense history-wise, legend-wise, and what they were trying to do. It just felt like it was a bit too meta for my taste with horror movies.
So, if you're following, given what they reveal near the end of the movie, I actually think almost everything that happened here was perfect. The reason I say that is because you're seeing this entire thing through the setup of a... frustrated, I don't want to say adolescent, but definitely juvenilely minded director who's basically directing live snuff films. And so you're getting all these tropes that are being brought in that are very familiar from other horror movies because of the fact that he keeps falling back on what he thinks horror movies should be about, and he's definitely stealing from this, that, and the other thing to make his little snuff films.
Okay, so it's not him. He's not the mastermind behind everything. It's their mother.
Mother? Who are you talking about?
Yeah, it was the mother.
The mayor.
The mayor.
The lady in red.
The mother.
She's their mother.
Okay, so I felt like he was the guy taking all the direction, though. He was the one that was setting up
he's walking everything through. He's like the fucking my daddy's a lawyer type. Okay, so his mom's directing the shit. She's like the mastermind behind everything. But he's in this version of their snuff film, he's currently the bad guy. Just like his little sister, while they were bickering in the fucking the Winnebago thing. Right.
Well, I feel like
she wants to be the villain next time.
I feel like the way that they set it up, the mother would be like the producer, the one who's funding everything, whereas Fabrizio and his sister were the bickering director and assistant director. Basically, they set up all the direction. They're the ones that are putting things through the motions. The mother is just sort of there trying to. I'm the one that has set these people upon you. This is my son. This is my daughter. These are the ones you're going to listen to. They're going to walk you through the motions, and they're going to basically, you know, bring you the people that you're going to kill. So everything's sort of set up.
Yes and no, because even Fabrizio, I'm going to butcher his name. Fabrizio. You are right. Portuguese. You cheat, okay? That is an unfair advantage. But he even says that mother wants us to do it a certain way. She has to have it a certain way. So the way I saw it was
when he's referring to a certain way, there's a ritual that they have to
follow. See, I noticed that like the second time I watched it through. The first time I was like, oh, it's just some little bitch boy fucking wannabe that got rejected by a bunch of women and fucking took it out on him.
The whole premise is based around
the mother behind everything.
It's based around this myth. It's based around the myth that he talks about early in the movie. When he's saying that mother wants it done a certain way, he means that there's a ritual that they have to follow. Even if he wants to present a storyline, make a movie, there's a ritual that needs to be followed so that they can get their prosperity.
I feel like it went a bit too new age, gotta get it done, gotta get to the point, sort of. Like, it's it felt a lot like a copycat of individual movies that you could name off of several different things that were placed in the movie, as if it was a knockoff, but its own thing. And, you know, it's not to say that horror movies can't be new and fresh. We've seen that over the past couple of years, that horror movies can still be very fresh, very new, and very well done. Just look at Jordan Peele and James Wan, and those people, and even the newer producers, like the guy who I can't for the life of me remember what his name is, but the guy who produced The Ritual, there's a possibility for horror movies. But I feel like with this one, it just didn't live up to the idea of there's potential here.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Just what is your knowledge of older Italian films, like horror films? What?
So from a lot of what I've seen, and this really is just excluding Italian specifically, my knowledge for European, any sort of Eurocentric movies in general, for older European, a lot of their movies seem to center around what is essentially the mythology they have, the rumors that they grew up with, kind of like how in Russia they have Baba Yaga. Okay. Things like that seem to, it's that, it's also a lot of, I can't remember the name of it specifically, what they call it, but it's like kidnapping films, sort of, hostage, key and hostage films, where it's like they've been taken to a dingy basement and they have to escape, but the killer's after them. I hate this movie with a passion, but things like Human Centipede, I know that's German, I know it's different, but things, Eurocentric horror movies, older ones, typically tend to revolve around the same premise when it comes to very, very specific categories. Except for England, for whatever reason, they're excluded. They're weird as shit with their horror movies, but they're good. They're weird as shit, but they're good. Excluding them, most Eastern Eurocentric movies, they kind of circle around the same theme, whether it be slasher, monster, thriller. It all kind of points back to a vague point of, I've been captured, I need saving from the killer, or this mythical creature that was a legend my parents or grandparents used to tell me about. It's all very common in theme. It doesn't mean it's not good. Some of them have been very fresh ideas. It's just, it's kind of rooted within the same common theme.
The reason I was asking what your thoughts on Italian cinema, or I should say Italian horror films, are, if you go back a little while ago to when Italian horror films were really big, or I shouldn't say big, they were kind of big in the idea that they were like kind of grindhouse horror films. They're now kind of cult classics when you reach out to guys like Mario Bava, Dario Argento, Lucio Felici. They took a lot of films and they looked around at horror films that were being made in other countries, sometimes more specifically America, and they end up making things that are sort of, okay, well, let's say George Romero's Dawn of the Dead was really, really popular, so now you end up with movies like Zombie or Zombie 2. There was no Zombie 1. You know, Zombie 2 was supposed to be sort of like a direct sequel to George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. And so they were sort of taking what were popular tropes from horror movies around the world and trying to incorporate them into their own and making sort of over-the-top, very gory films of their own. So you have a lot of guys, like I said, you know, Dario Argento specifically is one of my favorites. Mario Bava's right up there. That were making movies that were very much like what we watched in a classic horror story, where it was just sort of, it was over the top. They were definitely stealing things from other movies that we've already watched. You're looking at it going, I know what that is. I know where they got that from. This is definitely the same thing I just watched here. So I thought it was very self-aware when it made all the choices to kind of steal little bits and pieces from other horror movies. And it was even very optimistically calling itself a classic horror story, which in itself is a very meta name.
That's where it becomes difficult with horror movies, because I came up with a system that I like to call the push up, the push down, the push in, and the push out. Now, essentially, with the push up, what the push up is you can be self-aware in a horror movie. You can push yourself up. Like Cabin in the Woods was a very push up. It was a very push up. It was very self-aware. Very, very good. Very self-aware. Made fun of every trope. Or like, I don't know if you've seen it, but Tuck and Dale.
Yes, Tuck and Dale. I've seen that one.
Yes.
Tuck and Dale versus Evil.
That was a push up. It's good. It's positive. They're being self-aware in a way that works. Whereas a push down is the opposite effect, like with what we have in this movie. They take things from other movies where it may not necessarily work, and it comes off as if it's supposed to be mocking itself, but it doesn't do it successfully enough to give the proper amount of feedback, which is, you know, it kind of did it in itself at the end where the guy gave it a thumbs down. It kind of, it's, you know, in a way, it's saying that, you know, we know this is bad, but thank you for watching. The push in is oftentimes where, let's say, I'm pretty sure that everyone's familiar with New Nightmare.
Yes.
Dream Warriors. Yeah. Dream Warriors is a push in. It makes fun of itself. It's got the, you know, Freddy was horrifying for the times, but he was also comedic. It worked. It pushed in on itself. It made fun of itself, but also kept it entertaining. Now, the push out is like the movies we don't speak about that did what New Nightmare did with Dream Warriors and New Nightmare and pretty much all of the good classic cult movies. But the movie that we don't talk about in horror, every horror movie person's nightmare, if you've seen it, if you've never seen it, don't ever watch it.
The Serbian film
is a
Yeah, I already knew where you were going with that.
It's a push out. It's one of those movies where it's crossed a line. And that line should never be crossed. And it's just, it's a category of its own that is not good in any way. There's no way you could make it better. You can't pull it out of the dirt. Those are the four arrows you want to go in. Well, those are the three arrows you want to go in and the one arrow you want to stay away from. But those two specifically, the push up and the push in, are what you want. When you go for the push down, you're trying to do something good. Like with Jason X, where he goes to space. Or like with Leopard, every horror movie that's pretty much
in space. I never watched Jason X. He goes to fucking space.
Uber Jason, yeah. With the metal mask.
God.
Let's just say any horror movie icon that goes into space. Or the new Halloween movie that just came out. Is it essentially a horrible movie? It doesn't have to be. But it's when the people tried too hard who made that movie to make it into something that it isn't successfully going to be. And I felt like that's, you know, they did a good job with this. The atmosphere was beautiful. The cinematography was well done. The score was very well done as well. It's not that the movie wasn't well done. It's just that it wasn't well written.
Yeah.
So, okay. We're gonna go for best and worst here. God damn,
they got this down to a fucking science.
Right?
Thank
you. Thank you for being here. This is like desperately needed content sitting right here right now. Thank you.
Oh my god.
I'm like stumbling over my tongue because I'm having a little trouble right now.
Magnificent.
All right.
So, I need friends. I got too many.
You can't see it, but she's grinning from ear to ear.
I need friends, man. I gotta stop, you know, those demons in my closet. I get scared of nothing.
That's not our usual interrupter. That is actually Bunny's guy in the background there. Hello.
Hello.
Normally, I gotta yell at Fredo to shut up.
Hey, you don't have to shut up. If you got input, get a little closer to the mic so we can hear you.
Hell yeah.
You know? Feel free.
He won't let me play video games, so I'm playing Pokemon instead.
Ah. That works. So, we'll start with our best actor in the movie.
The doctor.
The doctor?
I would have to say the mother, because she's the only one that gave any sort of I feel emotion. It felt real. It didn't feel like it was forced. Everything else felt like it needed to be directed. The emotion of it felt, the sadness, the fear, you know, aside from, please pronounce his name for me. I'm going to get it wrong every time.
Fabrizio.
Okay.
Just
Mr. Fabrize, man.
Yes.
That's what we're going to call him. Mr. Fabrize, just the emotion, you know, the craziness of how he felt, a man going crazy, and for women to feel the fear of men that they have to feel every day, that felt real. That psychosis that he had felt real. Same with the mother. But a lot of the other actors, you know, even when she lost the blonde woman who lost her significant other, that felt forced. Anyone who's gone through grief, that those tears are, you know, tears can be real, but the grief just didn't feel a loss.
I'm kind of leaning on the doctor as well. Up until his death, I was good. Like, I don't feel like his death was particularly believable, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no.
Him or Sophia didn't really do a good job selling the death scene at all.
No, the whole death scene was awful. But he was the only one that I actually had any kind of, like, optimistic thoughts about. I thought he was going to make it out. But there's always the final girl.
Right. Well, Elisa was the final girl, and I didn't like her performance all that much. I didn't like her performance that much, but she is also, for the next part here, favorite scene. She was my favorite scene.
Too quiet
in the movie.
About the nails in her hands.
That was my favorite scene in the movie. Is her basically nailed to the wheelchair And then the Christ emulation scene where she basically pulls her hands off of the nail directly through, which definitely tore flesh and bone because that's the head of the nail right there. Those weren't spikes.
Well, that's what I mean when I say that I don't think that the movie was completely terrible, but as far as directing goes, it wasn't great because not everything has to be realistic. Obviously, this wasn't, but you know, when looking at how to act, if you're going to do something like a gunshot wound to the leg, a nail in the hand, a piece of glass in the torso, there needs to be some kind of believable response to that injury.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
unless it's a parody.
The overpowering screams would have been, the only thing we would have heard during the movie. So you got to tone it down a little bit, I guess. But
But at the same time, if you've ever gotten a nail stuck in any part of you, it's not fun. You know, I've been stabbed twice, and just taking those things out of you.
Not once by me, by the way. I just want to point that out there.
So a few years back, I got into a really terrible car crash, and you know, having glass impaled in you. That silent scream is real. It's just the way it was done in the movie is, you know, you can't expect perfection when it comes to these things because people react very differently, but it didn't feel, again, natural.
There were not a lot of natural reactions. We talked over each other. What did you say, Miss B?
No, it didn't feel like anyone did any, like, real research on it.
No, not at all. I mean, this was definitely a rushed movie. It's a Netflix films in general, if I see the Netflix thing on the bottom there, don't get me wrong, I watch plenty of movies on there, but if I see that little logo, I know that I'm either in for a mediocre, passable movie or a movie that I don't like very much at all.
I would like to make a point here. Eli wasn't bad.
Netflix originals that are really good.
Eli wasn't bad.
Eli was fucking
Eli fantastic. Was a fantastic. Why weren't we talking about that? We picked that one out, didn't we?
We already did, Eli.
No, we did not.
I know. I even told you we should have done a certain film, and you know, that passed by.
I went over our list of 142 films that we have done so far, and Eli is not one of them.
Oh my god.
We did not do Eli.
For real?
We do
bad films in general. Mostly horror, though.
We do films that did not get a fair shake the first time around. Mostly bad movies. Occasionally, we treat ourselves and do a popular film, but not often.
Army of Thieves. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have yet to watch it.
Oh, Army of Thieves. I feel like it was a good film for what it was, but it fell back on too many tired zombie tropes. It really did.
I mean, it was just a prequel to Army of the Dead.
No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Army of the Dead, not Army of Thieves. I haven't watched Army of Thieves yet.
Yeah, so Army of Thieves basically just takes place a couple years before Army of the Dead. It's the story of how that German lock picker guy kind of got to L.A. or to where the fuck he was.
I have not gotten to that particular film yet because I planned to watch it as part of the podcast. Like, I wanted to bring that up as one of the ones that we do.
I did want to bring this up. If you haven't done the ritual, I wanted to talk to you about doing that, which obviously we can talk about later, but the ritual is definitely one that I wanted to kind of bring up in correlation to this movie because it's when you take anything ritualistic in a movie, whether it's fake or not, people trying to play on something satanic or possibly just evil cult shit in general, it feels almost like the best way to describe it is how Deadpool felt when he was in Deadpool 2 when he was rolling through the hall what was it, the Xavier School looking at the photos of old white men saying he should have brought a whistle. That's pretty much how that entire cult scene felt. It didn't feel creepy. It just felt gross.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a very quick break to let our sponsor speak for itself, and we're going to be right back. All right. So we're going to go ahead and just sort of discuss the final little bits of the movie here, our favorite scenes, least favorite scenes, starting with you, Bunny.
Favorite scene?
Yes.
The ending. When the ending? It ended, the credits. I'm kidding.
That's an easy out. Come on.
I know it's strange, but I would say that it's not with any of the people, but just overall general cinematography. Just because I couldn't find anything interesting about the people in the movie, so I focused more on the cinematography than the actual movie itself.
That was one of the biggest complaints I actually had with the movie. I feel like they didn't spend enough time with the characters. You had no emotional attachment to literally anybody in the movie. So there was nothing that
but
really
that scenery was
anchored
fucking
you.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, but like it's like Final Destination. You don't care about the emotional attachment. You know what's going to happen to him.
But you don't care about the emotional attachment. You get a lot of background with certain people. You get an idea of who they are, what they're about. With a lot of the Final Destination stuff.
But these were just like a bunch of random people going, doing like a carpool thing to their different destinations. Like, they don't know each other. There's no real, like, backstory. You got, like, a kind of a backstory on the final girl. Who was, like, on her way to go get an abortion.
Right. That's about it. I mean, there was not a lot of backstory for any... And you get a little bit of backstory from the doctor about him losing the patient, then basically everything kind of falling down around him. But doctors...
And you got the backstory behind Mark and his girl, too. Fucking...
You know what? I'm gonna do this, I guess, if I can do this a little differently, because I didn't really have a favorite scene and a least favorite scene. My least favorite scene was most of the movie.
Okay.
I'm gonna say myself that I'm gonna give myself, instead of a favorite scene and a least favorite scene, I'm gonna give it a Golden Kill award and a, like, rusty trophy.
Okay.
Kill award for, like, the worst kill. So Golden Trophy kill has to go to when they just sludge-hammered his feet. Like, that was probably the best.
I think Mark's...
In my opinion, the best one.
Mark's death was definitely the best one, especially with the whole crank thing that they did to him.
The spikes through the face.
Yeah, the vice with the spikes that are pointed at his eyes, and they stop just as it's like a millimeter from his eyes, just letting him freak out beneath them for a few minutes before continuing.
I would say that was definitely probably my favorite kill. And then for the rusty kill, I would say that it had to be just the guy getting a shotgun to his face was so anticlimactic.
The only thing that I had a real problem with, I actually read up a bit, I listened to a couple of people discussing this particular film, and everybody's talking about how great the gore is. And I've seen a lot of gory films, and this one barely has enough gore for it to be a passable movie, a passable version of, like, CSI.
It's like we very barely haven't ever watched a Saw movie in their life.
No.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like, they pulled away during, like, pivotal moments when they could have, like, just stuck there and, like, had the gore, you know? I mean, even when they were, like, cutting off the ears, it was, like, the side. Gouging the girl's eye out, it's from the side. When they slit the throats, it was at a distance enough so you didn't have to actually see what they were doing.
But also be mindful that Italy has very, very different censorship laws than we do.
True.
And so that they are not allowed to receive a lot. They have a very heavy censorship law, and that can be a lot of problem. That's problematic for a lot of things with them.
Okay. I mean, when did they start censoring a lot of their films? Because Italy was known for some of the goriest films up until the Korea and China took over.
Roughly around the time that Russia started to become a little more lax on their censorship laws, Thailand, Italy, Romania, Turkey, a few other countries picked up on them. Roughly around 1973, when slasher films became a huge thing in America, they were really concerned in a lot of other foreign countries that that would become a popular trend, their people might mimic it. That started to become more of a popular thing for them to censor some of their movies due to the way that America was doing things in the horror industry and just a lot of what they called free culture, free will culture.
From what I was reading about Italy anyway, a lot of their really big problems, not so much with censorship, it's that they dealt with a fascist regime for a hell of a lot longer than a lot of countries had to deal with them. And for the most part, the Italian movie industry really looked down on films that were flights of fancy. So horror films or science fiction films or things to that nature, a lot of the companies that made films in Italy refused outright to bankroll films like that. Because they would rather have films that were more realistic. They wanted things that were, I guess, you know, murder mysteries, crime movies, dramas, comedies, things that kind of lean towards that and not so much towards sci-fi, fantasy, horror.
I was talking about the European film, the Bureau of European, the people who censor European films in general.
Okay.
Those, Each individual country has their own censorship laws, but there is a, it's like the UN, but with film. God, Gabe, you're a film major. Don't remember what it's called either. Okay. There is a, for each continent, they have a certain amount of people. It's like the BBC for us, or the FCC? Oh my God.
FCC.
Family. Yeah. Family Guy did a whole song about it. They are essentially to Europe what they are for us, and they do a lot of the replay for horror movies. Like when Alien, what was it, Alien that got made that they had a lot of issues making in England?
Mm-hmm.
Because of, yeah, they when they made Aliens in England, they had a lot of issues getting permits and everything to run that movie there due to their censorship, and also just the way that the British movie companies ran their movie sets in their time, it was an issue. And, you know, I want to reference, if you haven't seen it, the movies that made us, the most recent season is Nothing But Horror, actually goes over a lot of the issues they face if they had to film out of country.
Okay. No, I haven't seen it. I think my brain just skipped a beat, too.
Check that out, though.
Sorry, I did that ADHD thing that we've been talking about. My brain just scared me for a minute. I was going over a few things in my head, because I know that for the longest time, like back in the 70s, 80s even, there wasn't a lot of censorship in regards to what you could see in Italian films. It was just more of those who ended up being extremely low-budget films requiring a lot of practical effects because, like I said, nobody was bankrolling those films, really. They were not really investing a lot of money in anything that was really sort of considered unrealistic. So, a lot of my favorite foreign films come out of Italy, like, horror-wise. I am a big fan of, I went through my top three. Mario Bava, you had Dario Argento and Lucio Felici were literally some of the best Italian horror directors, and they were ones that knew how to get the most out of a very, very small budget because they had to search for their money elsewhere. So, that being said, okay, I'll give you your golden kill and your rusty knife there. Personally, I think the worst kill in the movie, outside of, you know, me talking about Sophia and what is it, the other guy's name, Marcos or whatever. No, it wasn't Marcos. What is the other guy's name?
Mark.
Mark was good. Ricardo. Oh, Ricardo, the doctor.
Mark was the boyfriend in the beginning.
Ricardo and Sophia, tied to a stake and being killed, was just, as far as I'm concerned, big mistake after big mistake after big mistake. They had so many opportunities to just kind of give you a scene that would have punched you right in the gut, and they didn't. The only thing that was creepy about that scene was the cult members standing around, the little mafioso cult members standing around clicking their tongues. Doing that.
Yeah, it made me uncomfortable at most, but I wasn't, like, creeped out. I wasn't fucking, like, on my seat's edge.
No, I don't feel like there wasn't anything that made me uneasy in this movie. There wasn't anything that set me on edge. It didn't give me that feeling of any kind of classic horror story. It just felt, it plodded along, it did what it did, it made its point, and now it's done, and I'm not going to watch it again.
Yeah, you know how some people have those, like, no textures or sounds or whatever? That is one of my, no, I don't like it.
Okay, which way do you want to go? Do you want to go best scene, worst scene, or do you want to go for favorite kill and least favorite kill?
I'll do the favorite kill, least favorite. Definitely, Fabrizio's death was my least favorite. It's so fucking bland. Right. There's your ending. What the fuck? Bitch, stomp his face in.
By the way, that's where the movie should have been.
Fucking bitch face in.
I wanted her to shoot the fat boy in the pool tube at the end. I really wanted that to happen.
Oh my god, me too. I was waiting for it. I thought he was one of, like, the inbred kids singing.
Oh, no, definitely not.
And the shit on his face was just like a fucking prosthetic, like the masks were props.
Okay, and then what was your favorite kill?
Honestly, the little sister.
The little sister being blown back into the trailer by the shotgun?
Yeah, the fucking, I love that kid, honestly. Love her. You're fucking incompetent, you can't do shit right. I should be the fucking villain next time. I know what I'm doing. Fucking doing her makeup and shit. Oh, go fuck yourself.
I mean, she was a narcissist, so is that really a surprise?
Yeah.
No, well, narcissist, definitely sociopathic. Definitely. So a narcissistic sociopath.
100%.
Yeah.
All right, so all in all, let's go 1 out of 5 rating here. What are you guys going to rate this particular film?
2.5.
2.5?
Can I negate the scale?
No, trust me, it's not that bad. The movie wasn't so bad that you happened to negate the scale.
You forget that I've seen probably a good 92% of every horror movie ever made, and yeah, it's gonna negate the scale for me.
You can't tell me that you can't say that, oh sorry, my apologies, I'm tripping over my tongue again. You can't tell me that you haven't watched films that were by far worse than this, that would negate the scale.
If we're talking about quality...
We're talking about the overall film.
Well,
so hold on. If we're talking about quality, I can't make a comparison between this and Chopping Mall, because Chopping Mall was made in the 1980s. So this would have been the equivalent of Chopping Mall in the 1980s.
Right. So it's basically a cult kind of...
Oh, God, it was so bad.
It's sort of a cult film. It'll probably be a cult film in the future. It's not something that was seen or received well right now. And future generations may look at it and go, oh my god, that's a fantastic film. Why did everybody hate it?
I know a lot of people
love Chopping Mall. I really do.
I like the ridiculousness of Chopping Mall. I hate the plot.
Oh no, it was a bad plot. It was horrible. I mean, it was basically, what would happen if short-circuited in a mall and killed everyone?
So
Johnny Five.
But that's why, you know, That's why I'm asking, well, that's pretty much why I'm saying, I can't say that there are worse movies, because quality-wise, yes, but also time-wise, it would be the equivalent of what would have been considered bad back then.
Right. I mean, it's still a bad movie, but all in all, I mean, you got decent cinematography. It was filmed beautifully. There were a lot of fantastic scenes visually. Yes, the plot in the movie kind of fell apart. I'm probably going to give it like two stars, because there are a lot of good elements to this, and if they had spent a little bit more time with the plot and the actual characters, this would have been a fairly plausible, passable film. But
I really hated Fabrizio's little like meltdown in the cabin after she figured out that he was wearing an earpiece and not a hearing aid. That whole meltdown was no, you stupid fucking slut, blah blah blah. Like, come on, dude, you can do better.
Tell me, you haven't seen guys that do like that? They have a plan for you. They want something from you, and then the second you ruin their plans, they start taking you down with every word that comes out of their mouth.
Nicole, I know you've dated at least one.
We know exactly what that's fucking like. Yeah. And it wasn't believable.
Okay, so his mouth was not believable?
He's
not a fearsome character.
If I were, and I say this with, like, the most amount of seriousness that I can. If I was in the movie, I would have drop kicked that fat little sack of potatoes.
Thank you.
There's literally so
many fucking things she could have used as a weapon right fucking next to her, and she just stood there.
You're right that Fabrizio is not an intimidating character. Not even when he was staring into the eyes of the deer, he is not an intimidating character. However, what he is exactly what he was.
Hair swish.
What he is exactly what he was meant to be. He is a sociopathic character who is at best infantile in his attitude. He doesn't have he has a focus. He wants to make a horror film, and he thinks that the best way to make a horror film is to actually fucking kill people. So he's making a snuff film.
The thing is that he's not a sociopath, because a sociopath would mean that he lacks any emotion. And as we can see, he clearly feels some kind of emotion. He's more of a narcissist. And I think that he's got definitely mommy issues and seeks approval. So I wouldn't call him a narcissist, but I would call him a mommy-issue-filled, I mean, not sociopath, but, yeah, narcissist, that has a lot of mommy-fueled issues.
I think the sociopathic part is the fact that he has no empathy at all.
Okay, you know what, the entire time I was watching this fucking movie, I was thinking to myself, this guy gives me serious Josh Gad vibes. Oh my god, I turned off the wrong thing, or unplugged the wrong thing.
We don't know enough to call him. We definitely know enough from what the sister said and how she acted, because we got to see the sister more. We know enough to call her a sociopath, but we didn't see him enough to make, because, you know, yes, they lack empathy, but I feel like we didn't see enough of it to see his story. And I think that would have been better if we had seen a little bit more of his story, considering the fact that, yeah, he's part of his family. He is the only one who has shown any kind of emotion, any kind of reaction. The other two kind of just did it for themselves and did it because they could, whereas he actually had a plan. He was panicking. He showed emotion. He showed that he felt some kind of way. It was more or less just in his own mind. This is how I'm going to do things. This is how I feel. This is what I want, which is very narcissistic. But I don't think we can claim him as a sociopath, because we haven't seen enough to see if he is, because he did show that fair range of some kind of conflicting emotion, which usually just means parental issues.
You know, sociopaths aren't necessarily devoid of emotion. The basic definition of a sociopath is antisocial behavior and a lack of conscience. So,
which is usually almost little to no empathy.
Right, and he doesn't have any empathy. Everything that he did, even when he was raging about her fucking up his plan, everything he did was to manipulate them into the positions that they were in.
Yeah, but he showed that he cared about his sister. He showed in those brief moments that he held some kind of emotion. And from just in general what we know about true crime, I'm not sure if anybody else listens to true crime while they're doing their makeup in the morning like I do. But just, you know, realistically, the case that I just listened to about a six-year-old boy who killed his friend because he wanted to know what it felt like and felt nothing after was the example of a normal sociopath in life, realistically, versus someone who's a narcissist like Ted Bundy, who still felt emotions but had a lot of problems there. So I think that it's fairly common that within cases of sociopathy, these people have absolutely no empathy. And if there are sociopaths with empathy, there are so few and far apart cases that it would be like finding a needle in a haystack.
Right. I mean, he definitely has... I'm not saying like he's a full-on sociopath. He definitely has the tendencies, though. Like, almost everything he shows throughout the film makes you feel like... He shows
the tendencies, but I feel like it's just because he's trying too hard to, you know,
get mommy's approval. Conscience, you know? There at all. There's just he wants to make a horror film and he's killing people to make it. There's no conscience. There's no real right or wrong going through his head. It's just
he's attention seeking.
Yes,
but if you pay attention to a lot of what he's trying to do and for the reason that he's doing it. A lot of it seems to be more family motivated, which means that there is some care there. He wants that lack of family that he has, which again, I think would have been more useful to have their backstory in there. It would have made the movie more interesting to see exactly how he got to that point. I think the focus on him and less on these people would have made the movie more interesting. The investment would have been higher had the story been about where this family got to and why they got there, because anybody can be a victim.
Jason will kill anybody. See a background story on Fabrizio's family.
Oh yeah, like a sequel.
Jason or prequel.
Because like, the mayor, their mother, looks like a fucking badass character.
Like, Jason kills anyone, but we don't really care about the people that he kills. But what we do care about is Jason's backstory.
Exactly.
All right.
He can kill a million of these teenagers that are generic. You know, they're teenagers, they're camp counselors, they are going there, they're horny, they're doing the same things over and over again. Typical teenager. You know, regardless of what their backstory is or why they got there, that can be explained in such short, simple details that doesn't really matter. Why is this man in a hockey mask killing people and why can't he die?
So,
you know, it's the backstory of the villains that matter in these movies the most.
I'm going to just read one last little definition here and tell me if you, I mean, and I know that I'm arguing about a definition of sociopath here.
Are you beating a dead horse, Chris?
Oh, I'm beating a dead horse. But the Psychology Today refers to a sociopath, a pattern of antisocial behaviors and attitudes, including manipulation, deceit, lack of empathy for others, lack of conscience, and aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And now, yes, he did show I can't even say that he showed anything that really made me feel like he loved his sister. I think a lot of his reaction was out of the surprise of her getting killed. Just sort of, you know, he was angry, very aggressive about her ruining his plans to begin with, and I think a lot of it was about him focusing even more aggression towards her for further screwing with his plans. He's working alongside of his sister at the direction of his mother, you know, and go ahead.
You can tell the difference between if you understand the psychology of the two, you can typically tell the difference between the two, and being that psychology is part of for whatever reason, my degree, I'm not really sure why it's part of my major. I have absolutely no reason why it's part of my major. I guess it's for game making. And since, you know, I haven't told you that, I'm a game art and coding major, and for whatever reason, we have to study psychology for characters. And the development of the sociopathy is a topic that we cover very frequently, for me at least, because I want to make horror games. And, you know, after doing a lot of research on the differences between the psychosis, there's a very, very light detail between a sociopath and a narcissist. They can mask each other very well. It's very hard to tell the difference. But the key difference is in how they react to different situations. Though sociopaths can mask it, I don't want to say really a carefree mood to them, but let's just use Fabrizio's death as an example.
I was going to get to that, and you know what? You take it away. You got this better than I do.
Fabrizio's death. You see him begging. He wants to live. He has the will to live. There isn't a sociopath alive that will beg for their life because they don't need to beg. They don't feel the need to beg. Even in real life cases, sociopaths don't beg for their lives. It's not a common thing when they've been sentenced to death, when they've been put to death. It's not something that they do. They lack that.
At that point, they'll laugh at the fucking situation, or they'll consider themselves a martyr.
They are the embodiment of, they are the closest embodiment of what we understand to be human nature and evil combined. And so, that, you know, speaking on a realistic note here, sociopaths are the human embodiment of evil that exists in the world, as the closest we're going to get to seeing evil on two legs with arms and a brain. Versus narcissists who care solely about themselves. They're more selfish than others, but they still feel, in some sense, whether it's for their own purpose and for their own selfish needs. Like, for example, he begged for his life. He used these people to get what he wanted. In the end, it did kind of fuck him over, but he used these people for his own purpose. He used these people for his own needs to succeed the plan for his family. Narcissists can still be very caring to a point. They only prioritize themselves and what they think is important or what matters to them first and foremost, versus a sociopath who literally will not feel a damn thing when you try to confront them on any level, even death.
So here's why I'm saying, well, we can agree that he has both narcissistic and sociopathic tendencies.
Well, I disagree with the sociopathic tendencies because after experience living with one and just being around one, I can say that I feel that he is nowhere near sociopathic. He's just a very traumatized, narcissistic little boy.
I have had my experience with sociopaths as well. One of my first jobs was working at one of the mental health behavioral centers over here in Georgetown, Mass. Mind you, it was passive experience, but... And I've had a few people that I've known. I wouldn't call them acquaintances or friends, but, like, again, passive experience. And I can at least agree with you on the fact that we don't see enough about him to make a decision one way or the other. Personally, I think when she pointed that gun at his face and he started doing what he did, it leans towards that deceitful nature. He doesn't really care. He realizes he is sitting at the end of the gun, at the end of a gun and death, and he may not get to complete his project. He has a single focus. So there's nothing that would prevent him, when he is in the middle of a life-threatening situation, from trying to, again, as he's done most of the movie, manipulate the situation, make her maybe change her mind about shooting him by once again presenting another deceit. I don't think he cared. I don't think he was crying or whining because he wanted to save his life. I think he had a gun to his face, and he needed to figure out a way to get the hell out of it, and that's the only thing that could come to his mind because the barrel of the gun's to his face.
I think that he was sincerely trying to figure out how to live, and yes, had that manipulation, but again,
that still steers less towards sociopathy and more towards narcissism, because narcissists will get angry when their plans don't work. They will overreact. They will be very expressive and aggressive in that reaction. And that's what we saw with him and his failed attempts to convince her or manipulate her in letting him live. Whereas sociopaths, once their plans failed, not hell breaks loose, but all emotion is void. It's a joke to them.
Not all emotion is void in a sociopath. Sociopaths in general, to be able to hide in society, learn to mimic a lot of emotions. They use those little bits of mimicry to sort of allow other... It's part of their deceit. It's part of the way that they deceive people. They have to learn to be able to mimic certain things, whether it be happiness or kindness or whatever they need to be able to deceitfully manipulate that situation, which is exactly what he did through the entire movie. He knew what he was doing. He knew that he was getting set to bring these people to a snuff film, that he was going to kill these people, and he showed no empathy whatsoever, did not care about the situation. All he wanted was from point A to point B. That was his thing.
Yeah, but then he goes on that little wah-wah-wah, poor me rant when he's fucking jacking off in the camera while she's sitting in the fucking camera room with her hands nailed to the
rage. When he's presented with something that's normal in sociopaths.
He's trying to power her, and she laughs in his face and he gets offended.
I think that we use that, and, you know, I wanted to say this. I think that we're using... When you give the example of empathy, I think you're misusing it in example of empathy isn't just the ability to feel, it's the ability to intake feelings as well. And so, you know, sociopaths don't intake feelings. They sense they have the ability to feel, but they don't have the ability to intake feelings. And he isn't,
I'm going to say no, he's not a sociopath.
I don't think he's a sociopath.
He's a narcissistic child.
Sociopaths don't have the ability to intake emotion. Yes, they can feel to a degree, very small, but they don't have the ability to have that intake of emotion, which is what makes the difference. That's that line that you draw. Narcissists can feel empathy. They can intake and export emotion to a certain degree as well. But with him, and we saw this between him and his sister, there is no empathy. There's a very, very small amount, but there is no empathy. It is very uncaring. She didn't even care enough to spare her own brother from having a mental breakdown of his mother going to be very upset if it's not done the right way for her or the family or the mafia or whatever it is that he's trying to get it done right for, that this thing is going to completely wreck him. She did not care. She wanted him to be quiet so she could be in her own headspace. She didn't care. There is no caring. There's an unfeeling. She used those people in her own way because she could. There was no reason behind it. She had no motive. She did it because she could. She didn't care about her mother's plan. She had absolutely no interest in that whatsoever. Whereas the brother, on the other hand, cares about what his mother thinks, cares about what his sister thinks, has those feelings, has the internal struggle of lack of family support. And so that is, I feel, again, we don't have enough information on him or his family to really connect the dots, but that is, I feel, the perfect two embodiments of the difference between what a sociopath looks like and what a narcissist looks like in their natural environment. The sister is a sociopath, but the brother is a narcissist for the very expression that they give off, their body language, how they react to certain situations, their emotions and reactions through the entire movie, and their purpose for doing it. Is why I'm saying that I cannot see him as a sociopath.
Very well. I am convinced and I capitulate. Okay?
that was a really long way of saying I don't think he's a sociopath.
Hey, you know what? You convinced me. Perfect. You convinced me. So kudos to you. And actually, it's that last little bit when you were talking about the needing to do it right for his mother, because he wouldn't care if he was a sociopath, if he was doing it right for his mother, because he's doing what he needs to for himself. Oh well, okay. Well, now that we've gotten the debate of sociopath versus narcissism within the movie out of the way. I've rated it a 2. You've negated the entire rating system altogether. And Miss B gave it a 2.
I gave it a 5 on Rotten Tomatoes.
You gave it a what?
A 5 on Rotten Tomatoes.
So that would go to Miss B then. If you average it out with a 5-star rating system, if you gave it a 5 on Rotten Tomatoes, that's about a 2.5, which is what Miss B rated it.
So no, a five is like less than 1 star. That's like less than a tenth of a star.
A 5? I thought they go out of a 10.
Rotten Tomatoes goes on 100% rating scale. I give it a 5.
You give it a 5 out of 100? Oh. So, well, considering you, we'll go half a star here for you.
Yeah.
We'll go half a star. Wow, you really hated that movie. Like, a lot.
I didn't. If I had, it was the modern day, it was the modern day, God, what's it called? It was the modern day Dolls of the horror world from the 1980s.
I mean, it's, if I'm entirely honest, this movie was literally a self-aware theft of several other movies and tropes. It definitely poked fun of itself at points, but the reason I'm giving it a 2... The only reason I'm giving it a 2 is because of the fact that it earned the 2 stars basically on cinematography alone. There were a lot of really beautiful shots throughout the movie. And the set pieces were fucking amazing. And if they had spent just a little bit more money...
That house was super derivative, though.
Or a little bit more time on the actual characters themselves, you would have had a really good movie. You know?
I don't think that money was an issue, because there are low budget monies that have done better for far less. I think they need a new director altogether.
Well, I would have replaced a couple of the actors. So that's just me.
That's, you know, director as well. Producer, director, right? Whoever.
My current favorite is Ari Aster.
Ari Aster? Oh, for what role?
Director.
Oh, sorry.
Derp.
My brain. Yeah, 10 o'clock at night, I should be laying down. I have a movie all queued up and ready to watch before I go to bed, so my brain is in ADHD mode going, oh, it's right there, it's right there. I'm watching Christopher Walken in this movie called Addiction, The Addiction.
I would never watch this movie again, is the whole point.
Walken?
Christopher Walken.
What kind of fucking heathen are you?
It's not Walken. It's Walken.
Give us a little bit of Christopher Walken.
See? There's the L. I heard it there, too.
I'm also from the Midwest.
You gotta say it with a fucking New England accent.
Christopher Walken.
I'm from the Midwest, man. We say Walken.
You know.
Walken.
You know the difference between Christopher Walken. You know the exact opposite. Fuck, I messed with Joe. God damn it. This is why I shouldn't do drugs this late.
No, no.
That would be the opposite of Christopher Reeves. It's Christopher Walken.
That's a good one.
Watch that episode of fucking South Park.
All right, so I think that's a good point to tie it up. We've kind of beaten the dead horse of this movie more than it needed to be.
I think it was just the right amount of beating.
I beat the dead horse just because I was up for an argument tonight, and that was a beautiful argument. I appreciated that. Thank you very much.
I am an encyclopedia of useless knowledge. If you'd ever like to have that open again, I am free 99.
Yeah, please keep coming back.
I have so much useful knowledge for things that I have no use. There's no way I'm going to use it. It's useful for somebody else other than me.
I think an interesting movie for you guys to tackle next time, if you haven't already, is definitely The Ritual. It's definitely worth a watch if you haven't.
So good. I made a cardboard cutout of Modan.
I saw her.
She's 11 fucking feet tall. 8 and a half, almost 9 feet wide. Oh my god, she's fucking magnificent. I'm gonna make a fucking. I'm gonna use that stencil and make a giant wooden cutout and hide her in the woods across from my grandparents' house and scare the shit out of my brothers.
You know that's not a she, right? You know it's Loki, right?
No, she's a bastard offspring of Loki.
Oh shit! Right, my bad.
Her name's like a baby.
Okay, with the bastard offspring of Loki said, thank you very much for listening to Cinematic Anarchy this evening, and on behalf of
myself... And drink some fucking water, you thirsty bitches!
You drink that water.
Okay, apparently on behalf of myself, Miss B says, drink that water, you thirsty bitches. Yeah. You talked right through me!
Drink some fucking water!
You drink that water.
Drink that water.
I did. Drink it!